You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
They can't do that to preserve the health of, almost like Mel Blunt would crush receivers. He became like the 180 of Mel Blunt, where he would crush defensive backs, and he wasn't the biggest dude. Like, Mel still to this day would be one of the biggest dudes in a secondary. But I just think that gets too overlooked. What say you, Sean?
It's tough, and I will always think of the NFL has changed so drastically with the passing numbers that both quarterbacks and receivers, it's hard to gauge guys that are playing now versus guys that played when Hines Ward did versus guys who played in the 80s and 90s. Right. Just because of the statistics are so skewed that there's going to be so many receivers retiring soon or who have retired in the past couple of years who will have superior numbers to Hines Ward. Well, so you're not going to get in based on the numbers. It's going to have to be the intangibles that you talked about. And it does seem unlikely that that many people would go to bat for him now if they haven't voted. You know, like Jim said, final crack at it. It's a little insincere if someone decides, well, now I'll vote for him because it's his last chance. So I just don't see it happening, unfortunately.
But that does happen. Maybe more so in baseball, where guys pick up support at the end of their eligibility cycle.
That's weird to me, because if you're a Hall of Famer, what changes, you know, 5 or 10 years after you become a candidate the first time?
Other guys put up bigger numbers.
And the numbers are only going to get bigger based on what we see from offenses. And, you know, Hines will be back in the day when there was only 16 games, and soon there will be 18. And so the guys that played in the early 70s when there were 14 games, you're going to try to compare those numbers to those guys. And it does make it tough for Hall of Fame voting. Fan weather brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Flurries today. They're going to pick up in the afternoon, and some heavier snow tonight. High of Franco Harris, speaking of the Hall of Fame. When we come back, it is New Year's Eve. It is time for the stories of the year. What are the Pirates' stories of the year? That's always an interesting season or an interesting discussion. It's Fan Morning Show on 93.7 The Fan. Fan Morning Show. Jeff Hathorn, Jim Cullen, and Sean Myers here with you on this New Year's Eve morning. I was wondering if you were going to react.
No, it doesn't feel like New Year's Eve when it's in the morning, though, does it?
No. No, but still, we were talking about stories of the year, and we were discussing the Steelers before the Hines Ward talk. For the Pittsburgh Pirates, another season, no winning year. However, the big story of the year, no doubt, only the third Pirates pitcher ever to win a Cy Young Award, Paul Skeens. Dominant, 197 ERA, 0.95 whip, 216 strikeouts. Paul Skeens, the runaway winner of the Cy Young Award, despite barely avoiding a losing record. What a season that Paul Skeens had for the Pittsburgh Pirates. You know, there was a little hesitation. Okay, how is he going to follow up that great rookie year? And, man, he did in big fashion.
Yeah, and then what this year turned into was, okay, why don't they give him some help? And you know, and that's where we're going to go to here in just a little bit. And I'm hesitating because I'm trying to look some stuff up because I want to go back and just make sure I have the numbers. At the beginning of the year, I remember thinking to myself, oh my goodness, because he gave up. I'm looking at his first few starts of the season, where he had a stretch where all of a sudden he was getting, and it isn't that bad, right? He gave up two runs, then one run, then five. Okay, so that's an outlier. And then he gave up two and two, but it was like every time he gave up runs, you're thinking like, what's wrong with Paul Skeens? When he was just like a regular old guy, when he looked like other pitchers. And I remember thinking at the beginning of the season, like, man, he's not quite, you know, the Paul Skeens that we expected. And then, but part of it is, like you said, to fight to not have a losing record is because you knew as soon as he gave up that second run that the Pirates had no chance to win the game.
I mean, even in the last 20, 25 years, the Pirates have had a few hitters that made you think, wow. You know, they had a home run champ in Pedro Alvarez. Andrew McCutchen won an MVP and did some amazing things. But they've never, Sean, had a pitcher like this.
So correct me if I'm wrong on this. I'm going off of memory here. Third ever Cy Young winner in Pirates history, Doug Drabek and Vernon Law.
That's it.
So we're talking like, well, I'm guessing around 1960 and around 1990.
Yep.
So this is something that happens basically every 30 or 35 years at best. So don't take that for granted. I grew up being a big Doug Drabek fan. I remember when he was a top-notch pitcher, when the Pirates were very, very good. And it's kind of crazy to think that they haven't had anyone as good as Gerrit Cole was at times, anywhere close to what Paul Skenes was able to do this year in an entire generation. Yeah, some people have never seen anyone in a Pirates uniform do this. And really, when we look at his historic numbers, you can match them up with anyone. Fernando Valenzuela, Dwight Gooden. Through 2 years, he matches up with just about any pitcher in baseball history.
Yeah, the frustrating thing with Cole was you saw him have those tremendous numbers with somebody else, not with the Pirates.
But once he stopped trying to throw those ground balls.
Derek Shelton fired as Pirates manager on May 8th. Pirates were 12-26 at the time. Overall, Shelty was 306 and 440. I mean, it just had to happen, Jim.
Yeah, some people would say, why did it take so long? You know, that's another thing where was he ever really given the resources? And yet, at some point, when you bring in a guy who used to be a hitting coach and the team can't hit, then you have to start asking questions. And how was he at handling people? At some point, you just got to. At some point, you just got to make a change.
And they finally did.
And everybody loves Donnie Kelly as well. They should.
Was named interim manager and then named full time manager. Sean, after going 59-65 and with no managerial experience, obviously a ton of coaching experience. I actually think Donnie did pretty well with all the things that he had to deal with.
Yeah, there is no doubt that the team played better under him than they did under Shelty. That said, I don't think Major League Baseball managers make a massive impact over the course of a full season. They got that immediate lift, and I do think that there was some improvement. I think maybe his handling of the bullpen was a little bit better. One thing that annoyed me about Shelty is it seemed like he didn't manage with urgency in a situation where they needed to win every single game that they were in. So you have to treat games in April and May like must wins because, you know, if you don't, you're not going to be around in August and September to compete. So we'll see how a full season plays out for Kelly. But I do think that he was an improvement. I just don't know it's enough of an improvement to really make a difference over a full season.
When did he get named coach exactly? Manager exactly? Because he could very well, he could pretty soon be the longest tenured professional coach in Pittsburgh. Because I don't know when Muse exactly took over.
Yeah, because even the Riverhounds made a change.
Yes, I know. I was actually thinking about that last night as I was nodding off to sleep. But that's obviously a huge story changing managers. And the thing is that Donnie, outside of the Pirates trading maybe what would have been a useful part of the rotation, they're giving him some hitters. Like there's a couple, they've already brought in two. Some people think that the Rays deal actually brought in another useful hitter besides Lau, and then O'Hearn, and then if they bring in somebody else to play third base who can hit a home run every now and again, then all of a sudden he might have like a real lineup where he can put a real major league lineup out there.
So that's what's next. The Pirate stories of the year here on New Year's Eve on the Fan Morning Show. Brandon Lau comes over from Tampa Bay with Jake Mangum and Mason Montgomery, who's a lefty reliever who had some moments. He's only 25, gets it up to 100 miles an hour occasionally. And then the Ryan O'Hearn free agent signing. I think there's still a little bit more meat on that free agent or offseason bone, but man, some actual, Jim, legitimate major league hitters, and both these guys are power hitting lefties.
And all of a sudden, you've got guys outside of, if they could figure out just how to get Cruz just into a good space mentally, just so that he can just kind of relax and just be himself. And do we even know what himself is? I'm not sure. But where Reynolds, where there's not as much pressure on a guy like Reynolds, who is a, you know, could he be your best hitter? Maybe, but if it takes some pressure off of him in the lineup, where you've got guys around him, where, you know, Spencer Horowitz isn't your best offensive weapon, all of a sudden it looks like, hey, you know, and if Connor Griffin turns out to be anything at all,
well,
I'm yes, jumping ahead of your yes, list. I'm sorry.
Yes, Sean, do you think the Pirates like actually could have a lineup with just these guys, or do you need one more addition in the lineup?
I'm of the mindset you can never have enough hitting, especially if you're starting at a level that was as low as where the Pirates were last year. I don't want to be Mr. Negative, because I do think that these are legitimate additions to the lineup. I do think, however, because people in Pittsburgh are just not used to adding notable players at all in the offseason, that it's maybe being overvalued a little bit. I think Lau is a very legitimately good hitter. The question is he going to stay healthy, and where are you going to put him defensively? O'Hearn is kind of a more recent proven guy, because he had a pretty miserable career until about 3 years ago. And I know that war is not the end-all be-all, but he has a lower career war than what Bailey Falter had in his time in Pittsburgh. So he's not been a guy that's been a great major league player over the course of his career. I'm a little concerned that it's not a guy that I think you can count on as much as some of the other options available. Like, for instance, Eugenio Suarez, who's proven that he's going to be a 30 home run guy every single year. I have a little more skepticism with O'Hearn. And for Lau, I think the big question is, does he stay healthy, and where do these guys fit defensively? But there's no doubt their lineup will be significantly better just by those two additions alone.
I don't care what anybody does defensively. I really don't.
Well, does the pitching regress as a result of some of these moves?
I don't know. I just want guys who can hit. Now, maybe, are they going to start losing games 6-5 all the time? Maybe. But I really don't think so. I think, give me some guys. And Suarez, by the way, you mentioned him. Just give him if he's looking for a 2-year deal, that fits right into what the Pirates have available that they should be able to spend.
He's about $20 million a year, I think.
Yeah, so you put him with what, you know, yes, just do it. They're going to go on strike next year anyway.
Yeah, they've kind of started down that road. Now finish off with that third baseman. It could be a guy from Japan, a 29-year-old who is making the rounds right now, and the Pirates are rumored to be a part of that.
Does he wear a knee brace like Aki?
He does not. Pirates traded the hometown kid. I think he was 3-time Roberto Clemente Player of the Year nominee for the Pirates, David Bednar, to the New York Yankees. As we look at the Pirates stories of the year, at the time, I understand it. I'm wary, because there are times where Pirates have made trades. We're talking about the Rays, but Pirates have made trades with the Yankees, and you were optimistic about what they got back, and it turned out to be a whole bunch of nothing. I don't know if Flores is going to be anything. I get it, but, man, this dude loved being here. He had Icy Light in his locker, and he gets traded off to the New York Yankees is one of the stories of the year, Jim.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with it, really. But the Pirates have always been able to find closers. They've been able to find bullpen guys. And I don't think, like, Montgomery, he throws 100. Okay, if they can harness that, which, you know, Tampa Bay wasn't able to do that. But if the Pirates can somehow harness, they've been able to find bullpen guys. So I think it was worth it. I think it was worth a move.
I think you always trade bullpen guys if you can get either starting pitchers or position players that will make your major league roster. You always do that. However, I do think there's a slight concern if Pittsburgh gets better hitting and good starting pitching, are you able to rely on the bullpen to close out games? Because that has been an issue the last couple of years, and at times Bednar was a part of those issues.
Yeah. Although, you know, the Pirates over the last 10 years have done a pretty good job of finding guys for their bullpen.
Yeah.
Maybe not insanely consistent guys, but they've found some guys that can fill roles for a period of time. They did sign Soto. Montgomery's going to be a piece of that. Santana looks like he could be someone in that role.
And would then, Jared Jones be a reliever?
So I am on the Jared Jones is my closer mindset. And I would hope Mason Montgomery would talk to him and say, dude, like I was kind of at a point as a starting pitcher where I was worried about a marathon, but instead I've just made it a sprint and it's helped my career. I would think for Jared Jones with his mindset, I don't think blown saves would bother him. It would allow him to just go out there for 20, 25 pitches and just fire pure heat.
I'm okay with it. That's how they find bullpen guys.
And I it's the mentality. It's all of it.
Some of it depends on how the other young starting pitchers perform as well.
It does, but I mean.
Well, he's not going to be ready for a few months anyway, right?
Right. So I'm telling him as I work you back into the majors, we're going to start you in the bullpen. And then if he has success and he turns out that, hey, this is actually pretty cool. I don't mind this. And I could get paid doing this, that might be an option. But there's such a stigma with some of these guys about being a starting pitcher and that it takes a while. You know, guys like Majinski are still looking to potentially be a starting pitcher when probably their best role is in the bullpen.
Didn't Mason Miller make that transition after he was starting with the A's initially?
Well, you know what it was? As a starter, he got knocked around by a callus in a practice at Waynesboro.
Ah, that's what it was.
And then he decided, you know what? I got to do something else because this dude is killing me. And he became a reliever, and the rest is history. When we continue, we'll finish off the list of Pirate Stories of the Year. We'll get into Pitt and Pens. Ray Fittipaldi will join us at the top of the hour. And at 9 o'clock, it is, even on New Year's Eve, a Wednesday with Whaley. It's a fan morning show. It is 7:19, and it's time to make the smart call. Buell Insurance, 724-443-5610. Neither are here, Jeff Hathorn and Jim Colony in for the guys. Sean Myers in for Nicholas Harry Callis. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. We're continuing with the Pirate Stories of the Year here on New Year's Eve. It was cool for the rest of the world to kind of watch the power of O'Neill Cruz in the home run derby. That was a really, I mean, even national people were like, damn, I didn't know O'Neill Cruz could hit it like this. Now, the challenge for the Pirates is to make the sideshow home run derby O'Neill Cruz into the better position player, more consistent hitter in 2026. But that moment in 2025 to see a Pirate on that stage, knowing that Skeens was going to start the game, Jim, was pretty cool.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is about, and yeah, it's great to win a home run derby, and he, you know, belonged to be in it because we all knew that he could do stuff like that because we've seen it. And every once in a while,
yeah, even to be a runner up, it was awesome.
And even to see it in, no, but even to see it, you know, we see it in games every now and again. But that's the thing, it's like every now and again. And one of the things that I think is frustrating is when he does something and then here comes a stat about how hard he can hit a baseball. Okay, he can hit a baseball. He can hit the heck out of a baseball. We see that. I don't need to know it was 108 miles an hour off the bat to know that he hit the ball hard. But that lack of consistency is what's mind-blowing. And a lot of guys are inconsistent hitters now. But the other thing about players is that when those of us that know what to do just but could not do it fundamentally, and to see a guy that has so much natural ability that doesn't know how to play the game in a lot of instances, that's very frustrating.
So if I'm correct, he had the hardest hit ball ever recorded in the StatCast era this past season. He also had, what, two or three throws that were, I remember the one against the Mariners where I think he got J.P. Crawford, who was standing up because they didn't even think the throw was going to be coming home. So he makes plays that no one else does. And you talk about the home run derby and his power potential. To me, however, it was a massively disappointing season for him. That was the highlight in what was a very underwhelming performance. I think 2026 is going to be make or break for him. And then for the Pirates, are you willing to give that guy a pretty sizable contract potentially if he has a good season? That's going to be a big question to me, because I think you've made this argument, Jeff, and Dan Zangrilli's made it. You can't go out and sign a guy like that if you're the Pirates.
Right.
The only way you can get one is if you draft him or trade for him before he becomes anywhere close to a finished product. So they really need it to work out with him.
I don't think it's a coincidence that his best season came with Carlos Santana on the roster. It was someone that he respected. That
find new customers on a platform that's here to stay. With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Is from a, you know, similar background, and I think Carlos could tell him whatever he wanted, and at times could be really hard on him, but it focused him, and he had his best year with Santana. I'm not saying to necessarily sign Santana, but they need to find a Santana or have Donnie not be afraid to just get in his face, because the babying him isn't working. Like, there's got to be a change in how they treat O'Neill Cruz, even if it leads to some kind of massive problem. Better to poke that and find his potential than to keep babying him along the way.
Yes.
Connor Griffin, the Pirates' number one overall pick, a high schooler, becomes the top prospect in all of baseball. As we look back at the Pirates' stories of the year, hit .333, a .415 on base percentage, .941 OPS, 23 doubles, 21 homers, 94 RBIs, and 65 stolen bases for the shortstop who can also play center field. I love his development and love that the Pirates have this prospect. Now give him every opportunity to beat out Nick Gonzalez and be the starting shortstop in spring training. If he's not ready, he's not ready. But he should be given a fair look and not just, well, some guys don't need a lot of time in the minors, and he might be that guy.
Well, and those numbers, that spans three different levels of minor league baseball.
Yes.
And a very short sample at the upper level. But nonetheless, I remember seeing, boy, how many years ago was this now, like Polanco. When you had McCutcheon, you had Marte, and then Polanco was coming up as a young guy, and he put up monster numbers in spring training, but he wasn't going to make the team because back then the Pirates were actually good, and yet at the same time they didn't want to go by what they saw in spring training, and they kept him down, which is probably the right move, and he never panned out. But with Griffin, if he comes up and he does, and I know in spring training you're not facing Paul Skenes guys every day. You're facing a bunch of minor leaguers and different pitchers, and stats can be misleading. But if he puts up a spring training like that,
you
keep him and play him, and then because he, I don't know. And again, I don't know the guy, Jeff. You may have covered him a little bit. I haven't at all. But he seems like the kind of character that he's not going to shrink at the challenge. He hasn't so far. Is there a chance that he'll come up and bat 100? Over the first three or four weeks of the season, and you have to send him down, maybe I'd take that chance.
And you know what Pedro Alvarez did? He was, 0 for his first 25 or 27 or something like that. And famously, the crowd rose and he ended up getting a hit. The crowd rose in support and ended up leading to a hit. But he went down to the minors and came back, had a really good major league career. I want to see Connor Griffin get every opportunity. And again, this is an awesome story. The dude's 6'4", 225.
They don't have anybody in front of him. There's nobody blocking him. You know, it's like sometimes you have somebody at a different position where they'll say, well, you know, we've got a first baseman that's, you know, a 25 home run guy and we can't find a room in the lineup for the guy. There's nobody blocking him anywhere.
You mentioned Pedro. I think of Mike Trout. The first time he came up, he wasn't ready. And he went back down, and then he came up a second time and suddenly was one of the best players in baseball right away. So you have to show some patience. I will say this. As well as Paul Skenes has turned out, I still feel like the Pirates mishandled the fact that they manipulated the service time and he ended up winning Rookie of the Year, but they didn't get the draft compensation they would have if he had started the season with them. And I know some of that with the pitcher's workload, you don't want him to go over so many innings. But I hope they learn from that mistake. And if Griffin makes the opening day roster and then were to win Rookie of the Year, I think even if he finishes second, you get basically a first-round pick for having him on the roster to start the year. So I think that is the way to do it. If you truly think he's ready, have him start the season, hope that he is such a good player that he gets first or second in Rookie of the Year, and you get a bonus pick as a result of it.
You know, one of the websites sent out that Josh Barton, I think, is the guy who sends out the emails, and I don't know which betting website it is. They list the odds for rookies of the year. And so I went to that list just to see where Griffin was. He's not on it. Bubba Chandler is at 9-1. So he's about in the National League. He's probably about, like, I think he's fifth or sixth at 9-1. Griffin's not even on there. But I'm thinking, you know, if he shows just anything resembling what he's shown so far, then play him. Bat him ninth. I don't care.
When I was a kid, one of the first players I remember, because he was that good, was Dave Parker. Like, he could do everything on a field and do it to a level that was that no one else could. And he was a big man at 6'5 that could run like the wind, had a Clemente type arm, had power, could hit for average. I mean, he was a five tool player before that term became sexy or became such a measuring stick of great players. Dave Parker was that dude. He had to wait forever, but finally, and thankfully, while still alive, he found out, even though he was not alive for his enshrinement, Dave Parker went into the Baseball Hall of Fame as one of the cool stories for the Pirates this year.
Yeah, why did it take so long? I never understood that. To me, he was, and again, from a New England perspective, there was Jim Rice. Right? There was Rice was in the American League, and Parker was on it. They were the same guy as far as I was concerned. They were just great. And Parker was better.
What do you know about Dave Parker, Sean?
Well, obviously, I did not see him play, but I basically heard about his power combined with his incredible arm, and how blessed have Pirates fans, if you go back long enough, how blessed are they to have seen he and Roberto Clemente both play in the outfield and have maybe the best arms in baseball for their given eras.
It's too bad it wasn't the StatCast era, right? We could see how...
That throw by Jose Guillen in right field, right?
Right.
Maybe the best throw in baseball history from a right fielder. But, I heard enough about Parker to know that he was a great player. I do think it's interesting because even after he got voted in, there were people who said, I had him just shy of making the Hall of Fame. I don't think his numbers over the course of his career matched up. But the Hall of Fame in baseball is so hard to figure out because we know, 10 or 15 of the best players ever will never be in the Hall of Fame. So do you kind of lower the bar for other guys? It's a very complex scenario, knowing that some of the best ever, like a Clemens or a Bonds, will not be in the Hall of Fame pretty much no matter what.
From 76 to 83, I don't know if there was a more feared hitter in the league. There were other great players in the league, but I don't know if there was a more feared hitter in the league than Dave Parker, and that was awesome to see that. When we continue, we will get in here on this New Year's Eve to some of the Pitt and Penguin stories of the year. Ray Fittipaldo will talk Steelers top of the hour here on the Fan Morning Show. Jeff Hathorn, Jim Colony, Sean Myers. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. What's going on? And you were preoccupied during the break, Jim, about what's happening in Erie?
Yeah, all the water got blown from Toledo to Buffalo, basically.
Wow.
Because the wind was so bad. I did see some stuff about how the waves on Lake Superior were higher than they were, you know, when the gales of November, and this isn't November, it's December almost for another day. But the waves were much higher than when the Edmund Fitzgerald went down back in 1975. But at Lake Erie, you could walk along the bottom of Lake Erie, like on the west part, like Toledo, and that the water level was like 13 feet higher.
13 feet?
At the Buffalo end, because the wind was that severe. And there's a bunch of pictures and videos and stuff.
So you're saying some surfing could happen.
That's a lake effect.
Some of the pit stories of the year from 2025. The emergence of Mason Heinschel as the Pitt quarterback led Pitt on a 5-game winning streak, played for a shot in the ACC title in the last game of the season. Obviously, 3 of the last 4 being losses took some of the shine off what Mason Heinschel could do. But for either of you, is that, and Sean, I'll start with you, it brings you excitement for what Pitt could do in 2026?
Yes, but I will also temper that by saying I thought the same thing a year ago with Eli Holstein. Now, he had a rough finish to his first year with the Panthers. I think maybe there's reason to believe Heinschel will be a little bit better, but we've gone down this road one time already. So one good season means a lot, but you have to do it multiple years. And so I think that's going to be the challenge, especially now with maybe some of the really good weapons around him potentially leaving, because we already heard maybe, you know, their top returning receiver, or who we thought would be their top returning receiver, and Kenny Johnson looks to be on the way out, Des Reed. So I'm going to have to see it for multiple years before I really buy in, because I thought once they got Holstein and he had his first, whatever, 6 or 7 games, that he was going to be the answer quarterback for years to come.
Yes, what he said. And then, but the other thing is that when, you know, they can hang with a lot of teams and beat a lot of teams, and they've got skill, you know, and they'll find a running back, because they always seem to do. I mean, Reed was excellent, but you know, they've got that young guy,
yeah,
as well,
Turner, who had that huge game at Georgia Tech and
right.
Lead that win.
But then all of a sudden, when you go up against a team that has linemen like Notre Dame and Miami, and then that's where the big difference is. And that's at any level of football. We always talk about, you know, how the game is won and lost in the trenches. I know that skill, and especially more so at the college level, that you can get away with scheme and speed. You can't do that as much in the NFL. But nonetheless, if you can't match up front and your linemen can't match, and I know that there's attrition, but that it's like that for everybody. Everybody's going to get hurt. So you're going to have injuries, but unless you can have consistency along the lines, then no matter how good your linebackers are, or no matter how good your receivers, your quarterback, your running backs are, if you don't have the linemen, you can't compete.
Guess who?
Best teams. Aaron Donald.
His number 97 retired, no longer to be worn. It was cool to watch his reaction when he was talking to us about, he's like, man, this is a lifetime. Like, even when I'm gone, like, no one can wear this number. Like, it started to hit him about all the work and how it really started that little before that last season at Pitt, but that last season at Pitt, it's like 28.5 tackles for loss. He won all the major awards that year that a defensive player could win. To see him back, even though the game didn't turn out because it was the Notre Dame game, but man, Aaron Donald is the epitome of the under-recruited guy that comes to Pitt and becomes something great. And he was spectacular. I know you remember that season.
Well, he made the, I remember him in high school. Like we did high school games that year when I was at ESPN. We did a few games, and I think we might have only done one of his games. It was against Gateway, and he was the best. And Gateway had guys that were going to Ohio State, right? Dorian Bell, I think, was one of them, and I can't remember who the other guy
Shane
was.
Shane Hale?
I don't
Is
know.
Who
yeah,
it was?
Yes, and I can't
Shane
remember
Hale
if,
was the Ohio State
if Sadler was on that team, Dan Mason. But anyway, but Aaron Donald was, he was like, you know, he was like the best player. He made ESPN's top play of the of the night once. I remember that the play that he made. I can't remember which team it was against, but anyway, but he was, like you said, under recruited, and he was even underappreciated coming out of Pitt, even though he was a first round pick. I think that was one of my rare successful predictions, where I said that he's going to be, you know, like the defensive rookie of the year, and he was, because he was, even though he was drafted low, and he still didn't have the measurables at the NFL level, but he was just a player. And he turned out, obviously, his record speaks, you know, he needs no endorsement from me,
yes,
as Mike Tomlin might say.
Well, I'm kind of bummed out because I went to Plum, and Plum and Penn Hills were kind of rivals, although Penn Hills won pretty much every year. When I was there, I saw Anthony Morelli. I missed Aaron Donald in the high school level, and then I started covering high school sports after he had already moved on. So I did not get to see him play. One really awesome thing about him is he's been Pittsburgh through and through. And he, I think, comes back about as often as anyone possibly could who was playing on the West Coast in the NFL for a decade. So he's a guy that always remembered Penn Hills, always remembered the University of Pittsburgh as well.
Other stories of the year for Pitt. Pitt basketball lost yesterday to Miami, but did sign a top 10 recruiting class for the first time in a very long, maybe first time ever. They've had a top 10 recruiting class, and Pitt volleyball made the NCAA Final Four for a fifth straight time. Unfortunately, lost in the semifinal for a fifth straight time. Olivia Babcock named the National Player of the Year for a second straight season. So she's been at Pitt 3 years, was the National Rookie of the Year, Freshman of the Year, then two times National Player of the Year. I had an alum come up to me, a guy who's been around, very prominent alum, who was saying that if they did a Mount Rushmore of Pitt athletes all time, she's on it, which is awesome in so many different levels. When we come back, we will get into the Pens story of the year before Ray Fittipaldi will join us at the top of the hour to talk some Steelers. It is the Fan Morning Show at 93.7 The Fan.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Fifty-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19 in Peters Township. Before we get to Ray, Jim, Roman Wilson, after Mike Tomlin had said, hey, with DK out, we're going to see how hard he's worked in practice, his professionalism, it's an opportunity for him, and he played 9 snaps and didn't catch a pass. Are we past savior, or still something there, or is it just move on from Roman Wilson?
I have no idea. I thought at one point, I don't know why I didn't, but I do remember thinking to myself, it was probably one of the passes they threw to Scotty Miller down the sidelines, where I meant to go look up to see if Roman Wilson was even active. I didn't realize he had even played 9 snaps. I just didn't even notice him. And he's obviously not part of, well, he's not part of Aaron Rodgers' plan.
Sean, what do you think?
I would imagine if you look through recent years, how many guys made almost no contributions whatsoever for 2 years to start their career and then became legitimate contributors, it's a pretty short list. And I know injuries were somewhat of a factor last year, but that excuse is out the window here. They desperately need someone to step up. He could not be, you know, given any more opportunity in terms of they don't have a number one or a number two receiver in uniform right now. If it's not happening from now, I don't think it ever will in Pittsburgh.
The Steelers have a history of being able to find receivers kind of in the second and third rounds, and yet they also have a history of picking guys, Lymus Swede, Sammy Coates, Martavis Bryant, you know, also guys in that realm. They draft them almost every year.
Well, it's more of a risk the farther you go down the draft, obviously.
Yeah, he just hasn't worked out.
I want to say that he's not done. Like, there's still talent there. Like, you see it in practice. But, Sean, to your point, it's not like he's waiting behind the Young Money family and Hines Ward.
The two dogs, one bone.
Right.
There's a bone out there without any dogs.
They're looking, yes, they're looking for a dog. And the Mike Tomlin, well, we didn't get enough snaps, or the run game, or the down and, like, that didn't play. Like, there's obviously...
That dog wouldn't hunt.
No, there are obviously some issues there. Can he figure it out? I mean, the athleticism is there, but, man, Fan Weather brought to you by the Myers Law Group.
Plus, he's from Michigan, Jeff. That automatically
Pittsburgh's
puts him on
choice,
your wrong side.
I'm the one defending him. Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Flurries today. Snow is going to get heavier around 4 o'clock this afternoon and go through the evening. The high is 32. What's a 32, Jim, beyond Franco Harris?
There were tons of them. There was one year back in the early, mid-60s where every MVP was 32.
But in Pittsburgh? Not
Dick Tonstrom was the only one that's written down.
That's on
the list. That's the only reason. That's the only reason I knew that.
I was trying to get somebody else if you could find some pirate that wore 32. And I know there's been one recently. I can't remember who the hell it is. No, it's not him. Anyhow, Ray Fittipaldo is going to join us next. We'll get into what Mike Tomlin had to say in this matchup with the Ravens.
Is Henry Davis the answer?
Sunday night, it is Henry Davis. That's number 32 for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
What does that
tell
you?
That is going to be the high today in Pittsburgh. Ray Fittipaldo joins us next here on the Fan Morning Show.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.